You want to know what you need more of in your life? Politics. Yeah, nobody ever said that. But if you've got to go ahead and spend money on one nonfiction book, it's got to be the ultimate clash of wisdom, awesomeness, and then obviously the politics. But why not a little bit of comedy? Why not a little bit of a memoir? Why not something that's going to make you say, hey, I actually enjoyed reading this. I laughed. I learned something in the process. Check out my book. It's an Amazon bestseller. You may have heard of it. It's Stay Away from the Libertarians. It talks about all the things you think you might know about libertarians, plus a lot of things that I bet dollars to donuts you don't know about. You can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble online. So go on right now. You can get it in print or ebook or Kindle or whatever you call it. Just go out and get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble online today. It's Stay Away from the Libertarians by Remso W. Martinez. Happens to be me. I'm gonna go on an angry rant about a person I don't really respect and possibly sound a bit immature, but hey, you know, sometimes you just get so overwhelmed with emotion, you might as well record it and spread it to the world. Hey folks, this is a Sunday edition of the Remso Martinez Experience. Didn't intend on it, especially given the topic, but hey, when in Rome, right? Might as well enjoy another day together to talk about some cool stuff as always. This is a topic I've been wanting to kind of discuss for a while, but I just never found the proper context. So I think I finally have the opportunity. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Maybe I'll sound stupid at the end of it, but hey, at least I'm being exposed, I'm being vulnerable, I'm being honest. You know, it's really funny the people that you run into when you do certain things. You encounter these individuals and you're thinking, wow, I wonder what crawled up their ass and made them so pleasant to be around. But I won't have to deal with them again. And then years later, something kind of pops up and you're thinking, ah, wow, this is a steaming pile of shit right here. Well, what do I do about it? You know, I broke another rule recently. I got into probably my first Facebook fight in about a year. And I really don't fight. I really don't even comment on things on Facebook or Twitter anymore. I really just don't. Anyone that knows me, I mean, I've been sharing a lot more cat videos and fast food creation videos and other random stuff than talking about politics. It's just I stopped seeing the benefit of it. I just stopped. I've just stopped caring. And you know, we still talk about that stuff on the show. It's just what kind of, you know, keeps things going. And I'll always find part of me getting pulled back in. But sometimes situations like what I'm going to talk about in this article that I'm going to read to you, they just kind of come up and just bite at you, and you know this is the only way you're going to be able to move on. So once it's out there, you can just move on with your life. what am I talking about? There's this article over by The Federalist, which, you know, it's well written, and it's been getting a lot of people, you know, jumping around it. It's the flavor of the minute, so to speak, because that's how everything is. Everything's a flavor of the minute. Especially, you know, when it comes to written articles. As a writer, it bugs the hell out of me. But, you know, truthfully, most people don't go past the headline and the pretty photo. So it's usually never worth getting angry about. But this was written by a person who about 4 or 5 years ago, I met her at a Students for Liberty campus coordinator retreat in D.C. And we were part of, like, the same work group or whatever. And I don't know what happened. Like, we were talking about childhood education and food insecurity and a bunch of other stuff, and she got mad because I wanted to abolish the Department of Education. And you'd think I was amongst the right group of people to have that discussion, but immediately I hated the poor because, you know, libertarianism for some people is just hardcore social liberalism on steroids. But this person took offense to it, and, I mean, you know, everyone gets upset about something, but I brought up, you know, the biggest problem that we're facing right now, the largest existential problem that I think no one can really deny is that this, the people alive right now, like, we live in a generation of Americans that are mostly raised by their mother, as in we have a large amount of young people who are raised by single mothers because their fathers are absent. And the data shows over and over and over again that children raised in a single-parent household typically encounter challenges that children who were raised by both a mother and a father don't. And that's not, you know, as she put it, an evangelical conservative screed based off bloated and false data. But that's just, that's what everyone says. Like, that's just numbers. Like, if you consider yourself a logical, scientific-based, you know, numbers person, like, go anywhere. You could see it in lower-income communities. You can see it in certain minority communities. I mean, why is it, you know, I'll specifically say Mexican families typically stay around each other more, and, you know, they're more secure in their nuclear family and their extended family than, let's say, the urban black community. And we're even seeing this amongst urban and suburban white communities where, you know, either daddy just left or maybe mom just didn't want to have dad in the picture because she wanted to be a strong, independent parent. It's just that that's just one of those things that is true. You're going to have problems. I'm not saying you're going to drop out of school. I'm not saying you're going to go to jail. I'm just saying the numbers show that life, you're going to encounter some things on a higher scale that other people just won't. I'm sorry, that's just life. Don't get mad at me about it. But this person just, like, from that point on, like, I get that she came from probably a different worldview as I did, but she was just not very pleasant. And, yeah, that was about it. I'm pretty sure we didn't talk to each other for the rest of the thing. Anyway, about a year later, she ended up writing about, during the whole Mizzou crisis, that was, feels like forever ago, during the whole Mizzou thing, I don't even remember that stuff. Long story short, people were upset because of free speech. It was like the whole beginning of the whole college free speech, you know, scream-a-palooza we've been having over the last couple years, and the Ben Shapiro's and the Milo's and everything else. And she wrote an article basically attacking what she considered free speech purism. And that got a bunch of people all upset, and it was like, well, whatever. It's just her opinion. And that's the thing, folks. Like, opinions, I'll admit it, some opinions bother me because they rub me the wrong way. But just like every other flavor of the month, you just gotta move on. You just gotta move on. I mean, how much time do we spend being angry because of something someone said or something someone did, a gesture or something? I think my biggest fault, especially as I was younger, that was that I gave political commentators and social critics a lot more credit than I think they should have ever gotten, because all it does is inflate their egos and make them seem more important. Because in all actuality, and I put myself in this category, like, commentators, pundits, like, they have no authority. They have no power. Like, literally, they're just like you and I. They have problems. Their lives aren't as good as how they appear on TV or online. And at the end of the day, like, no one's gonna remember most of them. I mean, unless you're, like, super big, like, maybe a generation from now, the people will remember, like, Ben Shapiro and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of people, and I, especially this person, and maybe myself included, maybe I should just, you know, humble myself a little bit. Like, we won't be remembered. No one really cares. We have really no effect on your life. They certainly had no effect on mine, but I thought they did, because what matters is the intellectual premise and the constant academic and virtuous battle of an exchange of opinions, all the other bullshit. Like, honestly, just get a job, pay your taxes, pay your bills, do what you gotta do to be an adult. But this article that she wrote, and I'll go ahead and read parts of it to you, it's just, it's so wrong in so many ways, and I think it really touches on certain things in my book, Stay Away from the Libertarians, that, you know, I know that if this affects one person's opinion, it's going to give me a headache for a while, so I might as well give out my best defense. For many people that know me, you know, I'll admit, like, a bit, the longest criticism I've had since I got involved in the realm of politics and political commentary is the fact that, you know, I'm a pretty hardcore libertarian on many things, but I'm also, and I don't see this label with a lot of derision as many other people do, I'm a pretty socially conservative guy. I mean, I'm very pro-life. I'm so pro-life to the point where then I go, you know, all left-wing on some folks. I'm like, I'm anti-death penalty. Like, you know, I'm a free speech purist, as she once put. You know, I believe that you should be able to buy guns through vending machines. Like, you know, just that's just it. And, you know, opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it's okay to be an individual and come to your own opinion on stuff. But anyway, this caught my attention because it was hitting the rounds, and, you know, I've been going through a bit of a growth period emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Like, you know, some stuff has happened and I'm trying to just reevaluate my life and everything, but especially when it's come to my religion, because, I mean, I've been going back to church more often. I've been really thinking about my life. Why am I here? What am I doing? I've been trying to, you know, get wisdom from the only place I've ever been able to get consistent wisdom, which is my faith. It's just me. But anyway, the title of the article, and I'll go ahead and link to it in the show notes. I do want you to go read this yourself. Like, someone's gonna be like, "Oh, you just went ahead and attacked this person, but you're a moron because you gave her more clicks." Like, honestly, at the end of the day, what matters is that you ultimately come to your own opinion. And I think that if you've been listening to me for a while, or even if this is your first or second time, I'm pretty confident I'll win. And if I don't, you probably weren't gonna agree with me to begin with. But what can I really do? Anyway, the title, "Will the Cost of Christian America Include Liberty?" That title alone actually does piss me off, because I'm pretty sure no one would ever write an article with any other religious group on there anywhere. And when it comes to Christians, like, you know, no one likes to make fun of anybody more than Christians. And a lot of people like to laugh and point out the fact that, you know, religiosity is going down, church service is going down, you know, modern secular progressivism and science is killing religion. No, folks, let me tell you, I went to Liberty University. No one's better at making people lose their religion than evangelical Christians and Catholics. We've been doing it for thousands of years, and we've been doing it pretty well the last couple decades. If you want religion to be destroyed, if you want Christianity to be destroyed, we're doing it pretty well. We don't need your help. But that's a whole different tirade. Subtitle, "Those of us who favor liberty should explicitly reject any attempt to reorder our public square towards the highest good." And highest and good, both of those layers are capitalized because, you know, in the context of what we're going to be talking about, it's religious, it's Christian. Typically in certain denominations, when I went to Liberty University and I spoke about God, I referred to God as he in any paper I ever wrote. I always had to capitalize the H. You know, in like, I've got a Bible where that's always it. And, you know, in the one that I read right now, the H is never capitalized. So now I just feel like I don't know how to write anymore. But that's a different thing. But what I hate about the subtitle is immediately what she's done is she's gone ahead and she's set up two sides. You're either with the Christians or you're with the libertarians who love liberty. So what about me? Am I not a Christian? Am I not a libertarian? Whose side do I take? Oh, please bring me in more. As a writer, I can certainly say that with the title alone and the subtitle, you caught my attention. Kudos to you. And I quote, "The tension between Christian morality and individual liberty is one many conservatives and libertarians are intimately familiar with, and for good reason." and please forgive me for stopping every couple of sentences, but this just, like, this is ignorance on display. Christian morality and individual liberty are not two opposing things. In fact, and I'm going to put on my Liberty University alumni hat, the book of Galatians, the letter from the Apostle Paul to the church in Galatia, like, that's all about Christian liberty. That's the book of Christian liberty. And honestly, that's what a lot of the Protestant reformers focused on in terms of the letters of the apostles. That's what, you know, Martin Luther King used to talk about. Basically, I'm sorry, but if you like the concepts of classical liberalism and a lot of other stuff, a lot of it came from the Protestant Reformation and that era, not the Enlightenment. Sorry to tell you, sorry to burst your bubble, but that's just it. Individual liberty is at its core when you go back, and David Bowes talks about it in his book, The Libertarian Mind. Much more of it goes back to Judeo-Christian thought, nothing else. It's just it's the ground rules for it. You could talk about Greeks and all the other stuff, but where it really became coherent was with the Christians. If you disagree with it, whatever, I'm going to go ahead and continue. But anyway, she goes again. Let's go ahead and drive up things and talk about stuff that we don't necessarily know about. At times, American Christianity has been a force for individual liberty in context of the abolition movement. I mean, I could also say a lot of other things, like why the witch trials in Salem in Massachusetts in United States history only lasted like a few months, whereas in other countries they lasted entire generations and centuries. I could talk about, you know, the civil rights movement. I could talk about, you know, really the anti-war movement. I could talk about a lot of things, but she only wants to talk about that. But it has also been a force against individual liberty, like in the push for prohibition. And I think this is really kind of funny, because that wasn't like an explicitly Christian thing. I mean, you had a lot of social academic groups and organizations. You had a lot of Fabians that also supported that because it was their way of curbing the behaviors of the underbelly of society. So that I just don't feel is, I mean, that's a generalization. That's a historical slap in the face. But really, that's just not, it's not really true at all. But, hey, you know, she, gosh, this is going to be fun. Still, the Christian nation has always had a core majority population that was familiar with Christianity, attended church regularly, and saw value in living, at least publicly, if not privately, according to the widely known tenets of their faith. That's a very accurate statement. I think she did address that very accurately. Continuing. That period may be at an end. Church going has diminished. Those who have no faith are at historic highs. In context, what were once essentially arguments internal to Catholic, Protestant, and evangelical cohorts now lack the shared language of underlying belief that has given us structure for so long. That change is disconcerting to some. I think that should be disconcerting to everyone, because it's like, you know, okay, this is why, like, one statist policy, like, if I were president, this would be my one statist rule. I do believe in having English as the official language of the country, not because I want to put, you know, enforce, you know, Anglo-Saxon, you know, ideologies and heritage on everyone, but just because, like, legally, I think it causes problems when everyone's not on the same page in music, and if you can't communicate in a shared language, and English has always been the historic dominant language of the United States, you're going to have a problem. But even when it comes to just understanding worldview, I mean, that has everything to do with your faith, your culture, how did you get to where you are, and what's the world you're living in? It's why I don't have a problem with people teaching, you know, biblical studies in public school. Like, I don't want people teaching, like, Old Testament and New Testament survey, because then it can get kind of dodgy from there because of, you know, depending on who you're talking to. But I think in, like, America, for example, you should have an understanding of Christianity. You just should. Basic level stuff. I would say the same thing if you went to Israel. Read the Torah. Know what's up with the Jews. Get along. Know what's up. You go to a Muslim country, read the Quran, learn what's up, be respectful. that's just a general thing. And, you know, for a society as big as ours, when we don't have those basic things to keep us together, it's going to cause problems. And we see this in a lot of postmodernism. They say, you know, go ahead and, you know, take away the religion. You have nothing left other than individuals fighting for power. And I don't think it's just disconcerting to some. I know many, I forgot who it is, but somebody over like the Daily Caller, for example, I think it's Benny or Benji. I don't remember his name. Someone will probably correct me, but he was like, you know, I'm a gay conservative who's not religious, but I want a Christian nation so that way people know what's up. And I forgot who said it, but somebody said, a while ago, I think it's in like some play or something. I'm not a Christian, but I hope my wife and my servant are, so that way she won't cheat on me and he won't steal from me. I mean, I think, you know, in everyone's core, we want that shared understanding of, you know, a cultural identity to a degree. But anyway, continuing. It's in this context that a skirmish has broken out between two traditional conservatives, Sohrab Ahmari. I'm not gonna lie, I've never heard of this person, and David French. I know about David French because Donald Trump made fun of him when Bill Kristol from the now dead Weekly Standard tried to get David French to run for president. And just sidebar again, sorry. Like this type of stuff, like, oh, these skirmishes, these, you know, these noted intellectuals, like if you're like most people, you just don't really care. They don't really matter, except to Beltway insiders. But anyway, continuing, about the best way to respond to movements they both feel threaten their interests in the public square. Now, I want to stop there. What's the public square? I might concede this point. I don't generally know what she considers the public square. Like, is it online forums? Because that's a big discussion. Is it, you know, academic settings in universities? That's a big thing. Is it, you know, rallying in public? Maybe. I think it's really just the general conversation we have amongst ourselves, our neighbors, our coworkers, and the people that are generally within our sphere of influence. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that that's what the public square means. It's important that we at least come to this understanding, even if it might be incorrect, because I don't know the context of which she's applying it onward. But, you know, bear with me. Anyway, French preaches more of a message of tolerance, while Ahmari advocates for a view that is more aggressive and confrontational. Ooh. So right there, you don't have to know any of these people, but if you're tolerant and peaceful and kind, you're obviously going for French. And if you're not, if you're a dick, you're going for Ahmari, the more aggressive and confrontational guy. And everyone wants to be on the nice guy's team, right? Maybe, maybe not. Continuing, both are concerned about the creeping steps they view as antagonistic to people of faith, though French's concern seems rightfully less cataclysmic. Ooh, so this isn't a skirmish. This is a fight for the heart and soul of America. Oh, get the popcorn. But our principal concern ought to be with liberty, which Amari's view does not give its due. Dun, dun, dun. So obviously, if you love liberty, you're going to hate this dude, right? In his First Things essay against David Frenchism, and I guess First Things is the name of the website. Yeah, it is. I did read some of what he wrote in that essay. And all the essays and stuff she talks about, everything's hyperlinked here. She did a good job at that. Ahmari treats libertinism and implicitly libertarians with a side of pagans for good measure as a dirty word. Gotta stop there again. Libertinism basically means that you're pretty much a Bernie bro, except you want like radical social freedom. You want to fuck everything. You want to snort everything. You want no one to tell you what to do. And in terms of pagans, like... And this is the one thing, like I talked about the capital H and lowercase h. I mean, just like words and context stuff that don't apply to like the rest of the world. Like, I don't know why she gets upset with pagans. She's an atheist. Like, yeah, in our view, you're pagans. Sorry. Like, that's just it. I have a friend who calls himself my token pagan, even though I'm friends with plenty of atheists. But she wants you to feel like we're personally going after you. It's she's been doing this entire time, and we're not even halfway through. So let's go on. The truth is that many libertarians have participated in a decently pleasant alliance formed against the looming paired enemies of socialism and suppression of free thought. It's fine, albeit personally objectionable, to hold that perspective in private. Why can't I be public about it? I'm friends with Mormons, Jews, Muslims, everybody. I'm not going to go around trying to demean them, but, you know, if they ask me, hey, Remso, do you think I'm a pagan? I'm going to be like, well, man, I don't personally think you're a pagan, but here's what I believe. Go to any Muslim country, and they're going to go ahead and call you a heretic and an infidel. I mean, this, little things. Where did I leave off? But Amari extends it to an idea about what form the public square should take, and apparently wants us all along for the ride. Oh, God. Amari states, and she's quoting him now, the only way is through, that is to say, to fight the culture war with the aim of defeating the enemy and enjoying the spoils in the form of a public square reordered to the common good and ultimately the highest good. Capital H, capital G. What's he talking about? God. Now, a little bit of context, which she doesn't really talk about. The first things essay that she brought up against David Frenchism and a couple of the stuff before that, it's predominantly written by Catholics writing for Catholics. When you're in, like, you know, mainline Protestantism or, like, you know, especially Catholic and theologically Catholic circles, they talk a certain way that you wouldn't talk to someone else. I don't know this Amari guy, but I doubt that if he were here on the show right now, maybe we should get him on the show. Let him refute this a little bit. I doubt he would actually talk that way. But what's he actually saying? If I can translate it from, let's see, Christian to pagan, let me do this. And I'll read it again. The only way is through. That is to say, to fight the culture war with the aim of defeating the enemy and enjoying the spoils in the form of a public square reordered to the common good and ultimately the highest good. What that means is, hey, we're not doing good. Look at our culture. Look at our entertainment. Look at where we are socially. We're not doing very good because we're not happy. Things are going, problems are happening that didn't used to happen. And the enemy is Satan. It's temptation. It's materialism. It's greed. It's sin. It's violence. It's hatred. It's intolerance. And we want to enjoy the spoils in the form of the public square reordered to the common good and ultimately the highest good. The spoils, this guy's not talking about, like, control. He's not talking about a jihad to go ahead and bring everyone out, you know, like the Taliban did, take them out to the soccer stadium and drill holes in their head. In Christianity, when we talk about the spoils, the treasure, we're talking about, like, spiritual enrichment, sanctification. And all he's saying is we should bring people back to God so that way they get the spoils in the form of the public square reoriented to God. It's just saying, hey, let's get back to our roots. You don't even have to go to church every Sunday. Just be a person that believes in something that points them towards something good. And I think even if you read this, you know, in a different context, whether you're Buddhist, Muslim, I there are plenty of good Muslims. One thing I love about Ramadan is I get to go, like, in 2 a.m. with my Muslim friends and we get chicken kebabs. It's freaking awesome. So, but he's talking about, you know, let's get back to our Christian roots. That's not a very controversial thing. In fact, he's not even the first person to say it. He's not. Anyway, continuing, and, you know, his quote is over. But who will enforce this reordered public square, and what does it look like? Right there, she gives it away. She thinks he's literally talking about doing it at gunpoint. The theocratic undertones are clear and troubling here. The theocratic undertones, they're not even undertones. They're explicit because he's writing in a Catholic, you know, very Reformed, Orthodox Christian website for other people that believe and think and talk that way. And it's troubling here. If you for a second are afraid of this dude, like, my gosh, like, You're just triggered by other ideas at this point, because I don't understand how anyone can read that and think, oh, he's definitely talking about, you know, going out in force, maybe with tiki torches or something. I don't know. We face a new, different reality than the highly than the high. I can't even read today. Than the high religiosity America of before. And in that context, those of us who favor liberty should explicitly reject any attempt to reorder our public square toward the highest good, especially when those determining the highest good cannot always, perhaps ever, be trusted in such power. And I think that's like. And I think it's really important to understand little things, because I really don't know, like, maybe she's as dumb as I think she is, or maybe she has some extra knowledge about the stuff that she's purposely withholding to draw you know, very naive readers towards certain conclusions. But how do I put this? Like, she keeps saying highest good. She's not even putting it in quotes. It's still capital highest good. It's still God. It's still God. And in terms of, you know, that, it's like, let me read it again. Especially when those determining the highest good cannot always, perhaps ever, be trusted in such power. I think that's a very ridiculous and a very condescending statement, because I think it was Michael Knowles at the Michael Knowles Show, and he's Catholic, and he said some stuff about Protestantism I think is kind of bullshit, but I still love his show. He said something very poignant recently. He basically said, you know, everything comes back to religion. Everything comes back to religion. Everyone has a religion. And I'm sorry, if you're an atheist, that's a religion. You know, it meets all the criteria for a religion. What's your origin? Big Bang. What are you? Human being. You evolved from something. What's your purpose? Live, eat, screw, and die. Oh, and make sure you populate to keep the gene pool going on. Where do you go afterwards? Nowhere. You're worm food. You know, from your Christian to your Muslim to your atheist to your communist to your conservative to your libertarian, everyone thinks they have their own God. Sometimes it's themselves. So, you know, when she does this, it's anyone that tries to say that anyone who thinks they know what truth is, you shouldn't trust them. It's always almost condescendingly coming from a secular progressive worldview. That's a fact. Continuing, the attempts by Christian conservatives in America to drive many people toward what they believe to be better, to be a better way of life, have hardly been raging successes. that's true. I mean, you know, that's not even like a recent thing. I'm a United Methodist, and you know, our whole doctrine is based around John Wesley. John Wesley came during, you know, the Great Awakening. In the colonial period, and he talks about it himself, and it's one of the things that really changed his life. Like, he went to Georgia and he hated it. It sucked, but you know, things got better, and you know, like it's a whole bunch of other stuff. Go Google it. But like this whole, you know, down, oh, are we going down? Like, yeah, it's bad. It's bad historically, but this whole, oh, this drive to go ahead and bring people towards religion and to get them Christianity, it's ending, it's coming to an end. Like, that's not true, nor is it even, you know, historically accurate. Like, it comes in droves. Sometimes it's worse, sometimes it's better. I mean, it's not this dour situation that she's trying to paint it. If anything, you know, there, I will try and link to this study. More millennials, so more people born after 2000, are not only religious, but they identify as Christian, and they're more likely to go to church than their parents' generation. I'm a Gen Xer. I was born in between, you know, all the craziness. So, I mean, I guess I'm just screwed, but whatever. They've failed as often, perhaps more often, than they've succeeded. That's funny, because more recently it's true, but I don't give it much credence. Given that lesson of human nature, isn't it better to allow people to determine for themselves what their own pursuits of happiness and meaning entail? Yes and no. Yes, because, you know, you can't force someone at gunpoint to become a Christian. I mean, I mean theoretically you could, but that's typically not how it's done. And secondly, no, because ultimately when people are left in a void, they're going to find meaning in something, and that's not always going to be good. For example, how is it that the rest of the world, you know, third world and the West and, you know, industrialized world included, you know, like murder, like just general murders and all-time low in human history. Why is it the rest of the world that generally has a religious component to most, if every, modern society seems to have moved on rather well in terms of human history, whereas you have like those random islanders that, like, speared that Christian missionary. I mean, these are people wearing loincloths, throwing spears at people because they thought he was an alien. Like, sometimes people don't choose the right thing. And if I'm, you know, if God forbid I ever become a parent, I'm not just gonna let my child just go run around. I'm gonna raise them my way, give them options, and then when they leave my house, they can really go believe whatever they want. But no, I don't think that's a good idea generally. I mean, either people are gonna figure it out for themselves or someone else is gonna tell them. I'd rather be the one to tell them than anyone else. Just saying, but whatever. Can't we hope people gravitate toward that of their own volition? They already do. That's not a problem people are having. If anything, people, especially in the United States, don't lack opinions. While understanding that any attempt to impose a particular vision would undermine deeply held American values of autonomy and free choice, who's imposing? Who, like Benny Hinn? Kenneth Copeland? Like, who's Joel Osteen? Like, who's doing this? Sidewalk preachers? I don't know who you're talking about. I really don't. Amari continues. She's going back to the Amari guy. Government intervention will not be the answer to every social ill. In many instances, free markets and individual enterprise can best serve the common good, albeit indirectly. But I take issue of David French-isms. he keeps calling them David French-isms. David French-isms, almost supernatural faith in something called culture, deemed to be neutral and apolitical and impervious to policy, to solve everything. Yeah, that's one thing about culture people don't understand. What's the root of culture? Cult. It's man-made, it's fallible, constantly changing, inconsistent, can be either a force for good or bad. I think when people are like, oh, well, let's just follow the culture. I mean, why do we say, oh, our common culture is bad, or oh, our culture is better? Like, it's not just something that happens. It's about the decisions we make and the views we have that affect those around us. It's not, you know, culture does not run people. People run culture. That's why things are always changing. Flavor of the month, all that jazz. Amari, oh, and rewind a little bit. When people say, oh, well, I'm just going to, when it comes to, you know, just random stuff, like I remember hearing this a lot during the age of Obama. Oh, you know, I could go vote in my next upcoming local election. I could volunteer for my local party and stuff like that. But I'm just going to let the culture fix it. That's the secular equivalent to, well, if God wills it. Hey, Jenny, will you be there next Friday? If God wills it, I'll let the culture decide. Like, that, it's a cop-out mostly, and that's what people say. They basically say that because they don't want you, or they don't themselves want to go out and do something about it. So we run the culture. The culture does not run us. That's just how it is, ultimately. She continues, Amari is right that culture is an incomplete prescription, and only conservatives – and one conservatives won't – I think that's just a typo there. Want to lose. Last night, I watched Meow Wolf Origin Story about a Santa Fe, New Mexico art collective of cigarette and joint smoking, skinny jean clad dudes and ladies who were disillusioned by the establishment art world. I don't think me and this chick agree on many things, but that sounds like a really cool documentary. She continues. They pooled measly paychecks together to rent a warehouse space where they could paint on the walls at all hours of the day. This snowballed into something more, the strange acid trip funhouse of Meow Wolf, a not-quite museum with a sci-fi plotline at its core, basically a temple where libertine pagans could worship. And, okay, so basically it's just a warehouse full of broke people that like to do crazy stuff. Okay, whatever, man. What you do, you. But the collective realized, after a period of barely restrained chaos and one successful art show, that they needed some form of order and structure for their community to stave off atrophy. Conservatives will never be able to penetrate cultural institutions, the art world, entertainment, because conservatives provide balance with an emphasis on order, stability, and creating something lasting, not fleeting. Maybe more so now, but I think that's kind of a bullshit statement, because when you look at European history, like art and entertainment were, I mean, there were Christians there. Christians still do it. I know Christian filmmakers. I know Christian writers. They're not the people doing Kirk Cameron movies and writing Christian fiction. It's all around you. We're just not in your face about it. So you're welcome, I guess. I'm so tired of these condescending remarks that she's trying to provide as facts. But anyway, whimsy isn't their strong suit. Bitch, please. Okay, continuing. Confronting a culture war that seems increasingly incapable of leaving Christians alone, Amari turns to an answer that sounds of Boromir urging the Fellowship to use the ring. When has he said that? He never said that. He's not... anything that she's referenced of him, he's not saying use the government, use guns, attack people. He's never said anything of this. Nonetheless, like Boromir, use the ring. What are you talking about? I digress. Continuing. In this, he underestimates the gloriousness of spontaneous order and the capacity of humans to learn from their mistakes and to seek balance where it is missing. I'm sorry. Everything in that paragraph alone, just a giant disconnect. And if we're going to talk about spontaneous order, this is beautiful. Because in my book, Stay Away from the Libertarians, grab it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, I talk about this professor at Liberty University. And for the record, you might laugh at this, I was the closest thing to a liberal there for a time being. And I had this one economics professor that said he didn't like libertarianism because we absolutized the market. And his source for that was Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. Whereas, like, he was like, oh, you would let people die in the streets of starvation because you'd privatize all the lakes and all the wells and you wouldn't let anyone have water. And it's like... No, that's why Adam Smith wrote his follow-on book, Theory of Moral Sentiments. And by the way, Adam Smith was an Anglican, and his father raised him very religiously growing up. And he references a lot of Christian references throughout Theory of Moral Sentiments, because you can't have a good thing if you don't have good people running it. That's basically what the OG libertarian Adam Smith said. So, once again, like, sorry... that you disconnected some stuff, you lost your footing of that, and like, God, this just now it's starting to crumble. Okay, cultural change isn't an ideal solution. Why isn't it? I take issue with that. I think changing the culture, which is a man-made social construct, yeah, I think changing it could be a good thing if it's good. You look at the libertines and the progressives and everything else, and you know, they're like, the bubonic plague is coming back to Los Angeles. Like, that's all I need to say right now. It is long and slow and requires much. No, it doesn't. How fast did fidget spinners become a thing? Remember Psy from Gangnam Style? Hey, sexy lady. Oh. Open Gangnam Style. Yeah, cultural sensation. I only remember that because that was my graduating class's graduation song, which still haunts me to this day. But yeah, no, it doesn't require that much. But it might also be the answer with a few negative side effects. Even Santa Fe Art Collective can slowly over time see the value of order and structure. What leads to Amari's pessimistic view that these things must be imposed instead of naturally sought and sorted out far from the state's clutches. I fear that imposition as well as the imposters. Oh my God, she doesn't read. Nowhere did he say he was using the state for that. If she did, like, either I didn't read it or she didn't quote it, but just from the one thing she's saying is the root of all her fears, he never said that. Never did. Now, why would a community of Christians be better than the pagan art hippies from Meow Wolf? The Christians have direction. They have the Bible, which is God-breathed, if you believe that. They have each other. They have an ethic, a Christian ethic, a Christian work ethic. Get jobs. Take care of yourselves first and your families first. Prioritize that and then work upon your community. Meow Wolf, those people were too busy getting high, painting on the walls, thinking they could live like children. And then they found out that, you know, you got to work and you got to take some things seriously if you want to survive. I'm going to take the Christians over Meow Wolf. Even I know atheists that would take the Christians over Meow Wolf. You know how I know that? Because society, there you go. Last I checked, we're living in planned suburban communities and not Henry David Thoreau communes. Just a fact. Go look at the history of communes in the United States. They always end in travesty. One of the best parts of conservative circles is the emphasis on the true, the good, and the beautiful. There's a pursuit of excellence and moral virtue, of not being atomized beings floating all alone in desolate, brutalist architecture, city blocks, afraid of speaking to our neighbors, but on forming families, communities, delightfully nosy groups of people who care not just about whether you live or die, but also whether you prosper. Attempting to force this will inevitably kill people's burgeoning and slow-moving interest in seeking it out. It would have, for me, a former libertine pagan. Here's the problem. Those people have God. You don't seem to. Talking to the author here. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. You just pretty much said in that situation you don't and you wouldn't want it. Why? Is it because that we say that you're doing some things that maybe you shouldn't be doing? Because they're not legally wrong, but they're morally wrong? Sorry, you know, if I see a person about to jump off a cliff and I'm like, hey, don't do that because you'll die, and they just say, well, you know, if the culture wills it, like, sorry, like, you gotta understand, this is a conflict of worldviews, and we have one, and you do too, but yours is leading to the problems which you say are actually worse than this self-imposed radical right-wing Christianity that you're so afraid of. If anything, you just prove that it works pretty well, and people are doing pretty well, whereas Meow Wolf, I don't think they're doing pretty well. I still want to watch the documentary, but hey, it doesn't seem to be going very well. And I'm going to skip the last couple paragraphs, but I'm going to read the last one. But of course, this is the case, blah, blah, blah. Part of the reason we have not sought any acceptable enough common good might I think that's ridiculous. Look at our law. Look at what we deem as, you know, pretty acceptable by society standards. I think we have a pretty good common good. Call it Christian-based or don't. We have a common good. Might simply be because we cannot agree on what that means and what price we're willing to pay for it. But what about the culture? Slow moving and not quick to change. The current leftist dominance of certain institutions does not qualify or diminish any of those concerns. It's a time-honored, beloved American tradition to curtail freedoms in times of war due to the alleged imminent danger. The more we look at the culture wars and actual war, the more we justify doing foolish things to restore the public square as it once was, but is not now. I'm not sure I enjoy the spoils of it. Girl, you just said you would, like, several paragraphs ago. You said you want it. You just don't want to have to change for it. This ultimately comes down to this, and I want to go ahead and, like, I don't know, if you're sensitive to scripture or religion or Christianity specifically, you know, put mittens on your soft, fragile ears. I'm going to read something from the book of Matthew, and this is ultimately where everything comes from. This is Matthew 28. Verses 16 through 20, New International Version, if that matters. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of age. If you know anything about Jesus, you know this. He didn't force people to do anything, but he spoke truth. And it's not the hippie, sanitized Jesus that liberals like to throw at us. Jesus did some pretty controversial stuff, and he said some pretty controversial things, but he always gave the truth. And he never forced anyone to believe it. They had to choose it themselves. Some did, some didn't. Some tried to stone him. Ultimately, some crucified him. And ultimately, several thousand years later, many millions and billions of people are still following him because of that truth. You want society, but you don't want the cost. You want the benefits, but you don't want the price of admission. You're afraid of judgment because you don't want to be judged. You don't want liberty. You just don't want the responsibility of having to say, you know, maybe I'm happy now, but where does this lead? I have no more to say than that. Like, I genuinely feel sorry for you. I really do. I'm gonna pray. Not that you believe everything I believe or that you come to Christ. I'm gonna pray that you do an evaluation of your life and you assess whether or not you're really happy and what you really should be afraid of. Because if these, you know, Beltway academic skirmishes are going to cause so much fear because of a lack of language, because you don't want to understand the opposing view, then you've got more problems than my diminishing church. And for the record, the church I'm going to right now is pretty freaking big, and we're getting new people all the time. So I invite you to come outside of your bubble and figure that out. But ultimately, folks, This comes down to you. For those of you that have listened to me for the first time or for years, I talk about this in my book, all my articles, all my podcasts, all the amazing conversations I've had. Everything comes down to this. You shape the world around you. Your actions carry what you believe. And what you believe should be something good for the benefit of others. And when you start to fear little differences, when you start to look at the perfect and only the perfect, and ignore the slight flaws that keep us separate, you're gonna find problems. Anyway, I've spoken too much for too long. That's about it, folks. I'm Remso W. Martinez, and once again, this is the Remso Martinez Experience. Good night.